You're listening to Greater LA, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis on KCRW. The LA County Court System, which oversees the biggest single population of jail inmates in the world, said today it will enact extreme measures for courtrooms and trials over the next 60 days. Now, this is on the heels of an LA County public defender and an inmate testing positive for COVID-19. All criminal and civil trials will be suspended, and some courthouses in Greater LA are closed completely. In other courthouses, arraignments, probation hearings, and bail hearings will continue, but with tighter restrictions. On the line with me right now, talking about the courts and what's happening in LA County, is District Attorney Jackie Lacey. Madam DA, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
The 60-day suspension of criminal and civil courts is to obviously aggressively cut down on traffic in the courtrooms. You're a prosecutor, and the U.S. Constitution guarantees the right to a speedy trial. Are you in support of these measures?
Absolutely. This is one of those situations where we've got to prioritize. If we continue to have the foot traffic and people that are coming in and out of the courthouse, it's inevitable that this virus will spread. And so we're balancing that, though, against the right to speedy trial and the right to speedy proceedings. And so what we're doing is prioritizing those cases where we have to have them litigated right now, then we're doing that, such as matters involving bail or emergency restraining orders, those of those nature. But the others we've got to put over really in order to protect all of us and protect our community at large.
So that means if there's like a crime that is violent or something like that, someone remains in jail awaiting bail, but those bail hearings will continue.
Yeah, this is the process in a nutshell. We've identified, when I say we, in combination with the public defender's office, the DA's office, and the sheriff's department, we've identified, looking through people's cases, which people can safely be released and ordered back to come to another time. And it's important for us to do that, one, because some of these people are high risk. They're over 60 years old or they have special medical conditions. And it's important for us to do that so that we can make sure we clear out enough space in the jail so that should someone become infected in the jail, they can be successfully quarantined and there's less of a risk of people who are in the court system, working in the court system day in and day out, becoming infected.
Have you ever seen anything like this?
I thought I had when we went through the Northridge earthquake. I thought I had when we went through the riots in
92 riots,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 92 riots, correct. This is quite different, where in a court system, we count on conversations, we count on close contact, especially with the public defenders, with their clients, but now we're in a position where that could put someone's life in danger. So it's very unusual, very, very unique, and the challenge is for us to keep calm and problem solve each day as we go along. Right now, we're in the thick of things. Because remember, we had the courts closed last week for 3 days, and so now we're seeing that bump where those cases that would have heard on those days are coming back during the next couple of court days.
So the backlog begins and will accelerate.
Right. It'll accelerate for right now. But then as cases get put over till after June 1st and different dates, then you'll sort of see it even out. But right now there's a bit of a bubble.
We're hearing about hundreds of inmates in California being released from local jails, including here in L.A., to help prevent the spread. Obviously, Governor Newsom is interested in releasing more nonviolent offenders. Even President Trump, at one of his press briefings in the past week, has said, you know, we're looking at that. We're looking at releasing nonviolent offenders. You're a prosecutor. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, of course, there is, and when people hear releasing inmates, right, that causes some anxiety. Who are they releasing? But here in LA County, and it seems like a lot of prosecutors are doing this, we're looking at cases. There are some low-level, for instance, drug cases, vandalism cases, maybe even some low-level theft cases where we can say, you know what, let's release that person, give them an order to appear at a future date, because the people in terms of keeping people in prisons and jails, we really need to reserve those spaces for those who are dangerous, who are violent, and who have to be in jail because of the charges. And so we're being very cautious about that. You know, it involves a risk, but it also involves courage. And I think what people want from their leaders is courage at this time and to really prioritize how we're using these confined spaces.
We're gonna wrap up, but I want to ask you this one question, because Sheriff Alex Villanueva told KTTV, Fox 11, that he's ordering the closure of gun stores across the county and adding 1,300 deputies to keep order. Did you get any consultation about that, and do you think that's a good idea?
I wasn't consulted. That's one of those questions where I would love to get a lot more information about it. From what I understand, what's supposed to be open is just those things that the governor says are essential. But there is a little inconsistency depending upon who you talk to, what's essential. So for instance, like gardening places are open. Why? Because you can grow your own fruits and vegetables, but people would argue, well, maybe that's not an essential function. The gun stores, I'm sure what the sheriff is trying to convey is that he wants everyone to be safe and law enforcement to be out there and be present and visible, and to for everybody to just obey the law.
But, I mean, there are some people who would argue, again, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, who would argue that a gun shop is essential. It's a Second Amendment constitutional right to be able to defend yourself, right? And in these very trying, testing times, closing a gun store, you know, whatever your politics about the situation, without consulting other people in the county.
Well, this is one of those things where you don't have a lot of time to have meetings and consult and call folks. But it really is up to our governor to say what's essential and what isn't. And so I would put it back in his hands.
So you're calling on Gavin Newsom to say something about this?
Well, I think so. I think it's within his purview to decide what stays open and what doesn't.
Jackie Lacey, L.A. County District Attorney. Madam DA, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. You all stay safe out there.
Now we're going to turn to L.A. County Public Defender Nikhil Ramnani. He's also president of the Public Defender Union, who's on the line right now. Nikhil, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You work at the Long Beach Courthouse, which is still operating, by the way. What sort of cases are you working on there?
Well, I'm assigned to felony trials here, so I'm assigned to all kinds of felony matters. But due to the emergency and the orders of the Supreme Court and the presiding justice, we're basically being called to work on all types of cases. Currently, I'm working on misdemeanors, emergency orders, bail reviews for all kinds of adults, and even helping out in juvenile as necessary based on staffing issues.
You were in court this morning?
I was in court this morning.
And what's it like over there?
We've seen here in Long Beach specifically, I have seen a drastic improvement from yesterday due to the new orders. The lines were reduced this morning. It does seem like the volume of cases has reduced, which is what we've been calling for. And we see security personnel and bailiffs, you know, taking a much more active role at social distancing enforcement and much more visible sanitation going on. But it's Tuesday, right? And we've been calling for these kind of measures since we were called to return to court on Friday the 20th. We still have a lot of issues in arraignment courts, as well as interview rooms for people in custody with terms of sanitation and social distancing right now.
I mentioned at the outset, LA County has the largest inmate population in a single system in the world, right? We're talking, gosh, north of 17,000-18,000 inmates, right, in any given year.
Yes.
Yeah. What are you hearing from clients about the state of things inside the jails?
Kind of three things. One, it's not clear exactly what kind of education is going on inside the jails about symptomology as well as prevention measures. A lot of my clients, I'm communicating to them the depth and severity of the crisis when they come to court or when I'm video conferencing with them. Two, a lot of them are advising that, you know, the conditions are they've never been appropriate for the kind of social distancing measures that we're asking for. I mean, there's overcrowding in actual cells. There's inability to wash your hands. You know, there is what we've heard. I, you know, pride of urgent isolation of symptomatic individuals, but you know, there's also just a kind of urgency inside to get to court, to petition, to get out as fast as possible right now.
But you understand, like, the unease of even the term of somebody telling you, we're going to let a lot of nonviolent offenders out of jail. I mean, a lot of people get a little frightened by that, right?
Yes, I get that. I mean, I'll say this, you know, 1 week prior to the emergency really kind of coming to full force here in LA County, the Board of Supervisors, you know, passed a motion adopting the Alternatives to Incarceration report. You know, we've been fighting a long time to expose how, you know, massive incarceration doesn't really address substance abuse or mental health issues appropriately. And I think that this crisis kind of exacerbates that. I mean, it's our position. A lot of these people don't need to be in jail in the first place. It's been an inappropriate, you know, solution to what are already public health issues. And I think that, you know, what we call on our justice partners to do right now is we really need to be considering releasing more people. I understand this makes people uneasy, but we're looking at a looming public health and humanitarian crisis in the jails if we don't reduce the population drastically. And a lot of people, not just people who are scheduled for release within 30 days, the justice partners should be looking at anybody that could potentially be released under normal circumstances in the next 18 months. Elderly people, pregnant women, people with pre-existing health conditions, all of those people need to be expedited for review and release as fast as possible. And I heard the Madam DA mention, you know, kind of these low-level offenses, theft, vandalism. I mean, we have initially asked for all misdemeanants to be considered for release. I mean, that even steps like that, misdemeanants who, you know, by definition have to be released, or maximum punishment would be a year in the county jail. Even those cases are not being expedited for review. So I think, you know, it's important that people are taking steps. I am seeing creative solutions on behalf of prosecutors and jailers about trying to find ways to release more people. But I think the public health officials and lessons from other countries as well as other jail systems need to be taken very seriously. We're going to see deaths in the jail, and we're going to see a humanitarian crisis if we don't act faster.
What do you think the long-term impacts, Nikhil, do you think this pandemic will have on courts and on the cases that your office handles?
I mean, I would just say, you know, I have cases that were, you know, getting ready to go to trial with strong defenses, and I can't even anticipate what trial or traditional advocacy looks like in a post-COVID-19 world. I mean, right now, I mean, we are basically putting out fires every single day and, you know, trying to communicate with families of people that are incarcerated, as well as people who have cases who are anxious about potential adverse consequences, about, you know, trying to stay safe in these circumstances and stay home and do our part to reduce the public health risk.
Nikhil Ramnani, public defender in LA County, also the president of its local union chapter. Nikhil, thanks for taking time out to talk to us, and be safe.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
Gosh, what a time. Just ahead, mass transit is taking a big hit in this time of working from or staying at home. But for the people who are using the buses and trains, how are things going? And how is LA Metro handling the crisis? That's next on KCRW's Greater LA.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiatakis. I hope you're hanging in there. And to slow down the spread of COVID-19, public officials are discouraging you from even leaving your house if you don't have to. That means discouraging you from using public transit if it's not an essential trip. So ridership, ergo, is down, as is revenue. But a lot of Angelenos rely on public transportation to get them to work, including those jobs that are deemed essential. So what is Metro doing to keep riders safe, but also to make sure that public transportation isn't disrupted for those people who really need it? Our regular contributor, Alyssa Walker of Curbed LA, is with us right now. Alyssa, how are you? Social distancing from home, of course.
That's right. I'm far away from you this time.
Yeah. So what changes are being made to public transportation in LA right now, Alyssa?
Yes, like you said, I mean, it's so funny to see our transit agencies actually discouraging us from riding transit. They're wanting us to stay home. They're wanting us to make sure that we're limiting our essential trips. But people do rely on transit to get around. So they're making some changes that make sure that people stay safe and stay a safe distance from each other while they're on the buses. So riders now have to board buses in the rear. They go in the back door to stay away from drivers, although they do have a little protective, you know, plexiglass sheet in front of the drivers, but just to keep a nice safe distance. And there are lots more sanitizing efforts, as you talked about before. And I think another really important thing is that they're eliminating some service. They're doing this hybrid service right now. So it's not quite a weekend, not quite regular service, but they're still preserving much of the service. So you can actually get a bus and you can spread out from other people, maybe a few seats apart from each other.
Is this realistic, though, to keep these in place, these orders in place, at least for the time being?
Well, I think it's what we have to do, because like we said, healthcare workers need to get to hospitals, and we have people who are work for the city and they might need to get to their jobs. And also, if you don't have a car and if you need to get to someplace that's, say, handing out food, you know, the LAUSD food centers that have been handing out meals to students, people need to get there. So we have to make sure that we are keeping even a baseline of service operational across the county to make sure people can get around safely.
Do we know how far down ridership has gone since the safer at home measure, or even since we started talking about this and really being concerned about COVID-19?
We have heard about 50%. Ridership is down about 50%. Some places it's down about 80%, just smaller systems or other places in California. And yes, I mean, this is going to take a huge hit for some place like Metro, where we don't rely on that much of our funding from farebox recovery, but you also have to think about things like Measure M, which relies on sales tax. So people aren't really buying a lot of stuff in LA County. The tourists aren't here right now. So all of this will add up to quite a big problem when it comes to financial hardship.
I know Congress, Alyssa, is currently debating, and the back and forth is just, you know, very contentious right now, in a stimulus package. Is there money in there that's earmarked for local public transit?
So last week when I started to report this story, there wasn't, which really gives you a lot of the information about what Congress thinks about transit. You know, they think about the airline industry and give them bailouts. They even talked about the cruise ship industry about how to give them money, but they don't really think of transit as essential. And I think that's what's really key here, is that this is every bit as essential as our healthcare system or our law enforcement or our school system. This is a public system that we are funding, and we have to make sure we're keeping it alive. So in the most recent discussions about these stimulus bills, there is some money allocated, and Metro would get some of that money.
Obviously, we're headed into a deep contraction. Record numbers of people filing for unemployment claims. We're going to, you know, we're seeing the stock markets take a big hit. If the economy really does tank badly, which it's tanking now, do you think people are going to lean on public transportation to save money?
Exactly. These numbers are so grim that are coming out. These are people saying that we're going to be 20-30% unemployment rate when we, you know, get back to work. And at the same time, you might have people that might have a job but have been at home for months caring for people who are sick, like just haven't been able to work. When it's safe for everyone to go back to work, we have to get all these households that will have less money to their jobs, or to those, you know, job interviews you're talking about, or back to where they used to work before. And I think that providing this kind of robust and even expanded transit service to those people is really going to be helpful. Also, remember that we had so many Americans. We had up to 7 million Americans on the brink of defaulting on their auto loans, which with many, many more who had taken out these 7 or 8 year auto loans. So you're right. Over this period of time, people might lose their cars.
At some point, things will go back to quote unquote normal at some point, right? It might be weeks, might be months. Do you think there's an opportunity here to rethink the way we do things as far as mass transit and people really thinking about the environment as well?
I think that's what we have to do. We really don't have another choice, because once this crisis is over, then we still have climate change to deal with, right? That one's not really going away. Even though we see emissions going down over the last few weeks and we see skies clearing, it's going to come back. So I reported this week about a new plan from the Green New Deal for city and suburban transportation. And you've heard of the Green New Deal. This is a plan to eliminate the use of fossil fuels throughout the economy by 2050. And their plans are really about service, like making sure, yes, we're going to need to build some infrastructure. Yes, we're going to need to, you know, get these trains and buses moving in. But this is really about investing in that service that can get people where they want to go and make it easier and more accessible for everyone to take transit.
Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor at Curbed LA and a contributor, of course, to Greater LA. Alyssa, stay safe.
You too, Steve.
And finally, before we leave you today, much-needed perspective from the front lines. One of our contributors, Jesse Hardman, talked to an emergency room doctor at UCLA Medical Center in Santa Monica. Her name is Lisa Dabby, and she and all other staffing emergency rooms around the world are heroes. They constitute the front lines of defense in the battle against COVID-19. But that also means that despite all the protective gear they hopefully will have to shield them from the virus, they are still among the most likely to become infected. So what does that mean for them and their families?
So I've been practicing emergency medicine for almost 20 years now, and I've never experienced anything remotely like this. This is completely unprecedented. Things are changing not only by the day, but by the hour in terms of workflow. We're trying to adjust as influx increases. It's scary. This is the first time I've ever taken care of patients who have a virus that we really know nothing about, which I think adds a lot of fear and anxiety to both patients and healthcare workers. And it does. It feels like we're fighting a war.
You have a family. You're a mom. What's it like coming home at night after working for 10 hours? What kinds of things are you doing to make sure, you know, your family's safe and okay and that you actually get some rest?
So I actually asked my husband if I can move out because I wanted to protect my husband and my kids. I didn't want to expose them to this virus. And he said no. So I'm trying my best. I'm changing my clothes before I leave work. I am heading straight to the shower when I get home. I'm not bringing my cell phone into work. I'm really trying hard to not contaminate anything from work and bring it home, because my biggest fear is not just me getting sick, but potentially bringing this virus home to my loved ones. And I think a lot of emergency doctors around the country are facing that struggle right now.
Yeah. What kind of conversations have you had with your family about the work you're doing? What questions do they have?
You know, I think my kids, I've been just trying to reassure them that we're all going to be okay. We're going to get through this, that kids do really well. I don't want them to be scared. But I've had real conversations with my husband. There's no reason for both of us to go down, is what I tell him. You know, it's one thing if I get sick, but the kids need two parents, or at least one parent. And it's a real conversation that a lot of people are having with their spouses right now. It's a reality. There are emergency physicians on ventilators in ICUs right now. And it can happen to any one of us. This virus does not discriminate. You know, older people do have a higher mortality, but young people are getting really sick and ending up on life support. So I've had some real meaningful conversations with my family about wishes should anything happen to me.
Yeah, a lot of attention in the last few days has turned to younger folks being infected, turning up in ERs. Is that bearing out in terms of what you're seeing?
Absolutely. On my last shift, I saw two people, one in their 30s and one in their 40s, who came in and could not breathe. They ended up testing positive for COVID. And it put the biggest pit in my stomach to see young people with no medical problems not being able to finish their sentences because they couldn't breathe. It was really horrifying.
What are you seeing that you're not prepared for?
So what I'm not prepared for is the fear of running out of protective equipment. What I'm not prepared for is this possibility that we're going to get so overwhelmed that we don't have enough ventilators to take care of the patients who need it. Those are terrifying ideas to me. I don't think I can go take care of patients without the right protective equipment. It makes no sense to me to put all of our lives at risk and then not be able to take care of thousands and thousands of patients if we get sick. And I hope that I never, ever have to make a decision of who gets put on a ventilator. That, you know, I've always been trained to help everybody to our fullest ability, and I hope to never have to choose who lives and who dies the way physicians in Italy are having to right now. That terrifies me. That is not something that I was ever trained to do.
Just lastly, if you could pass a message on, any other message to LA residents, what do you want them to know right now in regards to this pandemic?
So I would say, I have a couple thoughts. This virus is not just the flu. I've seen it now. It's real. It causes people to get very sick very quickly. It does not discriminate between young and old. I've seen young people sick and old people sick. It can take any one of us down. And my plea would be for people, everybody, if everybody could do their part, if everybody could socially distance themselves and use good hygiene, we should be able to overcome this, but we all are in this together. We all need to do our part. It's not just the healthcare workers who have to fight this fight. Every individual has to empower themselves and take it seriously. It's not going to work if we don't all do our part.
Lisa Dabby from Santa Monica Healthcare. Thanks for being with us. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great day.